Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, we'll be talking with poet and dream therapist Roger Kamenetz, whose new book is Seeing Into the Life of Things, Imagination and the Sacred Encounter. Roger Kamenetz is an award-winning poet, author, and teacher, professor emeritus of English and Religious Studies at Louisiana State University. He is the author of many beloved books, including The Jew and the Lotus, Stalking Elijah, The History of Last Night's Dream, and many books of poetry. Today, we're talking about his new book of nonfiction, Seeing Into the Life of Things, Imagination and the Sacred Encounter. Roger, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thanks, Susan. It's so nice to be here with you, really.
You're living the reading life all the time, I know, as we are both.
I think there's a bunch of books on my desk right now.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
But this is such an amazing book, and it draws on your whole life, as well as synthesizing all the things you've learned into a little bit of a new way of looking at things and building a spiritual practice. So talk about that process a bit.
So that title comes from, actually, Wordsworth, who says that with an eye made quiet, the deep power of harmony and the power of joy, we can see into the life of things. That, I may have misquoted it, but the idea is that before we can see the life around us, we have to quiet the eye. And by quieting the eye, really all the senses, I mean that if we can stay a little longer in the sensual encounter and moment without adding anything to it of reactivity, then we can have a richer, deeper experience of life.
Well, this all begins with what you call the blessing practice. So describe that for us. It's really what it sounds in many ways.
Yeah, very simple. It was I first learned it from E. Vilson, who was married to my teacher, Rabbi Zalman Schachter. And it was very simple. Just close your eyes was the instruction to a group, and then count your blessings. But the deeper of it is, you know, and I remember doing it and just something came up and I saw it and felt it and that passed away and another one came up and so forth. So a half hour just was gone. The closing your eyes part is also about the difference between seeing with the what Blake called the vegetable eye, the corporeal body eye, which is one kind of seeing, and seeing with the inner eye of imagination. And so this strange capacity we humans have, I mean, it may not be unique to us, but what do we know? I think it's not.
What do we know?
Yeah, right. I mean, when I hear my dog barking in his dreams, I figure he's seeing things too. But
or running.
Right. But the idea of the images that arise spontaneously that carry feeling with them is a practice of absorption and cherishing of our lives. In a sense, our experiences begin with experiences of the senses, of images. In the book, I speak mainly about images in perception, images in memory, and images in dreams.
Well, it made me go back and look up that March Piercy poem, The Art of Blessing the Day. And if you can't bless it, make it new is the end of that poem.
Right.
And I thought, well, if you can't bless it, you change out for another blessing. You know what I mean?
Well, right. And I think that there are hard days and days when either for personal reasons, heartbreaks, illness, or because of our susceptibility to the images that are being manufactured to drive us mad and to
bombard us.
Yes. And to distract us and to make us unable to feel, but only to react. So part of what I'm trying to convey in the book is the difference between feeling, which creates a depth and reactivity, which is outward directed and has a story about, oh, this one is bad and that one's an idiot and so forth, that keeps us on this wheel of reactivity. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a way out of that. And I think the way is to slow down, take a little more time to feel images rather than simply react to them.
Mm-hmm. I love that you describe having an internal poetic board of directors and who the members would be. And one of your great spirit guides in this book is Wordsworth.
That's right.
And I wish you'd talk a little bit about that, because I had forgotten a lot about his biography.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of parcel out his life in interesting bits, as well as his spiritual outlook.
Right.
So talk a little bit about going back to Wordsworth. I know many people do that at a certain point in life.
Right. Well, my friend Noah Warren, who was living in New Orleans for a while, really got me reading Wordsworth. I'd always been more a Blake person. But there's two things. One is that, well, he saw into the life of things by practicing exactly what I'm talking about. But he developed it himself after the death of his mother, who died when he was 7. He said at that point that, I'm paraphrasing there, that basically the house dropped away, but the props remained. And he found a way to find what he'd felt with his mother with nature. And it was a conscious application of looking at things and feeling them, and also seeing what they were in him, if I could put it that way, so that we can begin to feel into the life around us. And this, by the way, this came out, I started doing this during the pandemic. You know, we were so cut off from so much of life.
And sure.
But I could look at I'd be staying up with my daughter and Anya in Brooklyn and look at a bumblebee emerging from, you know, a hibiscus plant covered in pollen and just, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So that's a blessing.
Right.
And so I don't want to disagree with Marge, who I know, but I think that the search for blessings in each day is always possible, and it's certainly healthy.
Well, the other thing about Wordsworth was that he did wander with a W-A-N-W-O.
Yes, yes.
So talk about that. That's something we don't often do enough of now, I think.
Well, he was a walker in that sense.
He was a walker.
He and Ann Coleridge were great walkers in a beautiful countryside. But to me, he was a great introspective psychologist before there were such things.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a great capacity to examine his life. And his great project, which few have read in the whole, but I did it during the pandemic, which is The Prelude, which only published after his death in 1850, is a psychological examination of how does imagination grow in a person, which is helpful both for me personally, but also in thinking about my grandchildren and people around me. How do we foster an imaginative way of seeing versus, you know, often the way we're educated and taught, which is almost anti-sensual and anti-immediate, you know, that.
Well, one way we can foster imagination is by seeing clouds in the bathroom. I want to describe that for our listeners, which I love so much.
Thank you. So when my daughter Anya was young, I think maybe 4 or 5, she asked me what clouds were. So I said, well, come here. So we went in the bathroom and I turned on the hot water in the shower and the room soon filled with steam. And I said, that's clouds.
Here we are.
Yeah, here, right here.
I love that so much.
Yeah, it was a nice... It's a nice memory. It was all spontaneous. I mean, it just, boom, you know, okay.
It's Roger's science experiment.
Right. Right. Yeah, I've been thinking about clouds a lot. Do you know that they weigh tons?
No.
Yes, they're very heavy.
Whoa.
Very, very heavy.
Sometimes they do look very heavy.
They are.
They are.
So I've been thinking about that lately.
Okay.
Yeah.
There could be a picture book.
I would love that.
Although you have been taking more pictures. You have been photographing, haven't you?
Yes, because I read a book by E.O. Wilson, who's also kind of a character in this book.
Yes, he is.
The Alabama-born biologist, sociobiologist. He invented that field. He was known as a boy as Snake Wilson because he collected snakes all around Dauphine Island and everywhere else. But he wrote a book called Biophilia, which translated back into English just simply means the love of living things. And so he suggested that this love of living things is inherent in all of us. And so I thought, well, how can I cultivate that? He's right. Yeah. And so that's where I began, you know, staring at plants and bees and human faces and all the life around me and trying to feel it. He got me on that. So then I took pictures as well.
And they are very beautiful pictures.
Well, you're kind. Thank you.
So
I'm just an amateur.
Well, you're working on it, though, I can tell. I mean,
yeah.
Now, one of the chapters is about perception.
Yes.
And about the service of sight.
Yes.
And a process called saccading. Am I pronouncing that properly?
I think it's saccading, but I'm not sure. It's not often used, is it?
No, I never heard of it. But,
yeah, well,
but
you're doing it all
the
time.
Describe that process. It is so interesting.
Yeah, so saccading is the fact that I think about once, three times a second, our eyes move quite mm-hmm. almost violently, rapidly, boom, 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 and we're usually not aware of it. And of course, as soon as I say it to you, you stop doing it. But it's a very unconscious thing that not just humans, but I think all mammals do and birds do and so forth. So it's deeply rooted in our evolution. But what it means is that, let's say I'm walking down my street. I live on Burgundy Street mm-hmm. in Bywater. And I'm walking down the street and I'm visualizing that there's a stable three-dimensional space and that I'm walking through. But in truth, because of saccading, I'm only getting little glimpses here and there.
Right.
And then stitching them together with visual cortex and other higher brain functions, including I'm checking out my previous ideas of what sky and sidewalk and potholes look like, and I'm uh-huh. adding that in.
Which so, changes a lot on a daily basis here.
For sure.
I mean,
yeah, our data may not be correct as we hit the pothole. But the point is that seeing, even seeing, let me mm-hmm. say seeing is believing, but seeing is actually a creative, imaginative process.
Right.
And we're just not conscious of it.
And you have a wonderful passage about that. And I wonder if you'd read it for us now.
Sure. It's about a flower, which all my neighbors are great at keeping the street sidewalks look very neat, except for mine, which is full of these. I've cultivated these weeds that are called dayflowers. I love them so much. So in this passage, I'm describing what it means to look at something, mm-hmm. to see into the life of something.
Right.
Okay. By pure seeing, I mean bare seeing with no story attached. When you stop saccading and contemplate a thing more sensually, a flower or your beloved's face, time slows down, your ongoing ego narrative ebbs. Then the act of seeing becomes visionary and whole. This was the sublime feeling Wordsworth achieved in many moments of his life, the summit of his encounters in the natural world. And the same sublime feelings live in your dreams. I felt expansive with my blue flower for a brief while in earthly minutes on a late September morning. I plunged into the blue vortex of this little weed for a reason. I needed consolation that morning after a week of tending a dying friend. First glimpse, blue color, flower form. I fixated, but instead of quickly saccading away, stayed for a long second look. Those long second looks opened me to depth. The color drew me in. As I focused out there in the so-called real world, I saw two distinct blue petals, crepe paper, textured mouse ears. In here, I felt joy. The more I looked, the more I felt it. I became engrossed. The blue radiance worked in me. I spent minutes in a quiet gaze reserved for eternally adolescent goofballs like me. The longer I looked, the more I saw and the more I felt. I have a committee of poets who serve on my inner board of directors, and among them sits Basho, the 17th century Japanese haiku master. I feel I am one of his students. He taught, go to the pine if you want to learn about the pine, or to the bamboo if you want to learn about the bamboo. So, what was I learning from my blue flower? She engaged me fully. As much as I was feeling, was it possible she was also feeling? Basho thought so, every form of insentient existence, plants, stones, or utensils, has its individual feelings similar to those of human beings. A few dogs and their walkers brushed past me on the narrow brick sidewalk as I crouched and then knelt for a closer look. Someone in another era might have thought I was praying. I had moved deep into my inner world, but I was not meditating. That is, I was not focused on my breath, thoughts, or body. I was, to be precise, contemplating, looking at an image and feeling into it, contemplating a radiant blue, or better, a blue radiance. I felt the mysterious color enter me, and because I could not immediately offer a better name than blue, the unnamed sensation seemed even more wonderfully unbounded. This blue carried a great brightness into my heart. It made me feel a special joy.
And what makes it even more wonderful is that there aren't that many blue flowers in nature, you know?
That's true. Well, I don't know, but I believe you.
We
don't see too many. I mean, we have this... I like weeds. I'm a big fan of weeds. So I'm not a cultivated flower person, but... So I like the ones that struggle against the sidewalk cracks
and keep coming back.
And keep coming, but they have guts, you know. So I like the Madre de Mios, these sort of alligator plants. And I love these Virginia Dayflowers is the official name, which I did not know that morning.
That's a lovely name, though.
Yeah, pretty good.
So now instead of mentally, I was hearing when I read that Allen Ginsberg going, ah, sunflower, of course.
Oh, okay. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And now it's, ah, Virginia Dayflower.
There you go.
Which I like a lot.
Well, and we could be ah-ing a lot of things and ooing and awing them too, right? So that's the opportunity. And and I think the vacation from the news.
Yes.
Which we need so much. And even though this book is not explicitly political, I just want to say that I feel maybe more than ever we need to cultivate a kind of resilience, an inner resilience. Mm-hmm. And from there... In loving life, we can build community, and if we can do that, we can find the strength to get through this
right.
moment.
Now, you talked in that passage about feeling your way into an image.
Mm.
And another thing that you talk about in this same chapter is a skill you learn from your neighbor, Joe Cabral.
Oh, he's not my neighbor, but
not
he's a friend.
Neighbor,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe was a member of the Iguanas, and he also plays with my friend Glenn Hartman in the New Orleans Klezmer All-Stars. But Joe, I was talking to him, and he had sat in with this band called Ram, which is from Haiti. And I said, well, how did you learn that music? Because when you listen to it, it's so different.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I listened at it.
I
listened at the music. And so I think that gave me an idea about the intensity of hearing, which goes well with the intensity of seeing that I'm cultivating. So I started trying to practice listening at, which mm-hmm. means, I think, listening with real attention and intention. So I was walking my dog, and there was up in the little tree, I heard this singing, and then I saw this bird, which is a Carolina wren. I knew that because it has a little Nike swoosh over its eye. And sing for pound for pound, this is a mighty singer for a very small looking bird. And mm-hmm. I was just in love and hanging out with that sound, listening at it.
I love that passage. That was really wonderful. We all listen at in New Orleans, I think, better than most places.
We try.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Now, another part of this process that you write about is searching for affinities. And you have such interesting examples.
Mm-hmm.
Da Vinci learning to draw water by drawing hair.
Right.
Yo-Yo Ma adding musicality by thinking of water.
Right.
And scientists like E.O. Wilson and Einstein.
Right. Right.
So talk about that search for affinities and what that says about us.
Well, I think it says that, and especially when you bring up the scientists, that imagination is required. Mm-hmm. Science is not just cataloging facts. There's a leap of imagination. So, of course, the great case of Einstein, where he imagines falling in a closed elevator and realize it in such a, you know, an outer space, if you were dropping down in some eternal elevator and you had an apple and dropped it, it would fall to the ground. So he realized that gravity was also the same as this acceleration of the elevator. So, or when he rode a bicycle and said, what would it be like if I were riding at the speed of light? What would everything look like? So he had this sort of wonderful, you know, Walter Isaacson talks about this a lot, that he had this wonderful visual imagination. It was mysterious for him too. This is where he had a kind of religiosity, you know, that, and wonder from a very early age.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Roger Kamenetz. His new book is Seeing Into the Life of Things, Imagination and the Sacred Encounter. Another one of the things I love about this book is that it's so personally revelatory. I love the way you use your neighborhood. I love the way you write about your family. Talk about writing about your grandchildren and what they brought to this book for you.
Well, let me talk about Boaz, who's he's turning four now, but when I was writing, he was two. And I describe in the book, well, just one thing was just, you know, one of my moments of blessing was just he came through the door and he held out his arms and I came to him and we hugged. And just that, that's a moment of blessing. True. And we can prolong these moments. We can dwell on them, contemplate them. That enriches us. And maybe we spend a little more time with that and a little less time with things that take us away from ourselves. So one time, it was breakfast time, and he was looking at the toaster, and I noticed, I started looking at it too, and I noticed his delight when it suddenly popped up. You know, I've seen it a billion times, but
of course,
it was new to him. And that made me slow down. And so, you know, I made some eggs for him, and I cracked them, and I saw the kind of slimy clear stuff and the yellow yolk slide into the bowl, and then I beat it with a fork, and he beat it with a fork, and dropped it into the pan, and it started to sizzle. And all these sensual experiences that we take for granted, because I was with him, my teacher, I was learning to slow down and take delight in them.
And you show us that teachers are everywhere.
They are. They
and
really
many
are
in this book.
And some of the, you know, some of them are patience teachers.
Yes.
We should thank them, too.
We should. It can be hard to thank them, but we must.
We need to. Yeah. That's what the Tibetans call them, patience teachers.
Patience teachers.
The people who annoy you and make you mad, they're teaching you how to be patient.
All right. I'll hold that thought.
Try it. That's hard.
We've been talking with Roger Kamenetz, whose new book, So Useful, is Seeing Into the Life of Things, Imagination and the Sacred Encounter. You can meet him Tuesday, November 4th at 6 at Octavia Books, and again Sunday, November 9th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Roger, always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. You're a delight.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Don't miss the Louisiana Book Festival, Saturday, November 1st, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Baton Rouge. All the action's on 4th Street downtown at the State Library, the Capitol Park Museum, and other locations. More than 200 authors appear, along with a full day of performances for young readers, family activities. Authors scheduled to appear include Robert Olin Butler, Richard Campanella, John Dufresne, Marty Dumas, Desiree Evans, State Poet Laureate Gina Ferrara, Wendy Godin, Wally Lamb, Nick Mueller, and Marguerite Sheffer, and it's all free. Check out LouisianaBookFestival.org for complete schedule and info. There will be an All Saints Day celebration of the life of Anne Rice, produced by Christopher Rice and Eric Shaw Quinn, Saturday, November 1st at 7 at the Orpheum Theater. Tickets available at Ticketmaster. Margaret Orr and illustrator Matt Renard signed Scrim, My Tale, as told to Margaret Orr, Saturday, November 1st from 10:30 to noon at Octavia Books. Philip Fracassi, author of The Autumn Springs Retirement Home, and Christina Henry, author of The Place Where They Buried Your Heart, and Brian Asman, appear in conversation Sunday, November 2nd from 1 to 2:30 at Octavia Books. Kiana Walker-Lamal discusses and signs Beyond the Waterline, Sunday, November 2nd from 1 to 3. That's at Blue Cypress Books. Wally Lamb reads from and signs The River is Waiting, Monday, November 3rd at 6 at Octavia Books. Roger Kamenetz reads from and signs Seeing Into the Life of Things, Tuesday, November 4th at 6 at Octavia Books, and again Sunday, November 9th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Amanda Tyler signs How to End Christian Nationalism in a Piercing Conversation with Carrie Gaspard Hogwed, Wednesday, November 5th at 6 at Octavia Books. Nathan Harris discusses and signs his novel Amity, Wednesday, November 5th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. Ashley Farmer appears in conversation with Shanette Garrett and discusses her book, Queen Mother, Black Nationalism, Reparations, and the Untold Story of Audley Moore, Thursday, November 6th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. The Symphony Book Fair holds a pop-up sale November 8th from 9 to 4 at the Symphony Book Warehouse, 623 Distributors Row in Harahan. Proceeds will go to the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. There will be books, music, CDs, DVDs, vinyls, puzzles, and more. The event is free and open to the public. Local authors and educators Bill Lofelm and Erica Welter appear at the November Saturday Writers Clinic. That's at 9:30 Saturday, November 8th, when Bill discusses building characters, creating fully realized and unique characters that leap from the page. And then Erica presents The Art of Critiquing and Feedback at 11. The creators of Dead Man Walking, the graphic edition, author Sister Helen Prejean, scriptwriter Rose Vines, and artist Catherine Anyango Grunewald appear at the Holy Name of Jesus Church at Loyola University, Thursday, November 13th at 7. Words and Music, coming up November 19th through 22nd, has released its full lineup. Start planning now at wordsandmusic.org. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.